Welcome to Dead Man's Party. Nostalgic reviews from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. With your hosts, Chris, Alex, and the Ghoul. Who could ask for more? Don't run away, it's only them.
Steven Seagal's Above the Law. My name is Al, and I'm with the guy who will come back and kill you in your kitchen, Chris. What's up, Chris?
Good morning, sir. Coming to you live from a very windy southeast Missouri, which sets the tone nicely for me since we're going to be getting ready to stroll through the windy city of Chicago.
Wow, see what he did there? And we are with the guy who doesn't think he could take them all, but he will get an A for effort. The Ghoul. What's up, Pat?
What's up, dude? I'm here. I'm ready.
Yeah. Above the Law, 1988. Director Andrew Davis. Writer Andrew Davis. Steven Seagal, of course. And Steven Pressfield. Starring Steven Seagal. Pam Grier. Henry Silva. Ron Dean. What now?
It's Pam Grier, but I love hearing you read names every week. It's great.
That's the best part.
Daniel Fajardo, Sharon Stone, Jack Wall. Okay, so no one knows anybody else, right?
No.
There's a few bit players here, but yeah, no one of real name.
Notoriety, yeah. No huge fame here. So let's start how we should. So this is Steven Seagal's first movie, and what's really strange and I guess notable about Steven Seagal is that everybody that we love, action-wise, they all started off really in minuscule ways. Like, we all know the story of Van Damme trying to be the Predator. We all know stories of Stallone and making a porno. We know Arnold did Hercules in New York. People didn't really just come out and headline a movie, but somehow Steven Seagal got people to believe in him and buy into him and really bank on him and trust him to carry a movie on his own. And his first movie, Above the Law, he even had a lot to do with the writing of it. It seems like a biopic or something. He integrated a lot of his real life into this movie. He doesn't have his trademark ponytail here. You could see he's trying to get there. So it ends up being really weird and boxy in the back and just like hanging around. And then you could see that he's like bald on his hairline. Like there's these two missing patches on the sides of the front of his hair. And then that goes away.
I was going to say he rectifies that by the next movie, I believe.
The very next movie, yeah. It's really awkward to see if you know all his movies besides this one. But, what do you guys think of Steven Seagal overall? Like, listen, I don't want to go into this. Like, should we review this like we were when we were kids, how we saw it? Or should we review this like we know this guy's a blowhard and we could basically, like, goof on all... Or we could do both, right?
Well, I only saw this once as a kid, so I can't even really look at it through that lens.
Right.
Yeah, Like I said prior, like, Seagal's spotty for me, but this I remember seeing, like, bits and pieces of, and watching it in full was a fucking ride. Like, there's a lot of weird shit, but, like, good, like, fun stuff going on in this fucking movie. So, yeah, we can do it either way. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think we can go back and forth with it. We could praise it for what's good about it, and we could also make fun of him whenever need be.
Yeah, for sure.
So, this is the first of many movies where he holds a gun on the poster of the movie. Like, if you look at all, like, because I was on IMDb and it said More Like This, and it was all his movies, and, like, his next four movies, he's somehow, like, holding a gun in some way. It's, like, so funny.
Dude, the Blu-ray for this, because, like, instead of buying it on streaming, I was like, fuck it, I'm not buying that, like, because, like, you can essentially get it, like, revoked at any time. The Blu-ray for this cost me fucking $50.
What?
No, yeah. It didn't.
Yeah.
You're lying.
I'm not lying. This thing is, like, one of the hardest I get. And it's not even, like, a special edition or anything. It's just, I guess, it must just be, like, out of print or something.
Did you look on Amazon?
I got it from Amazon for $50.
It's on there right now for $8.59.
I think that's a region locked one, because it keeps going under, like, there's an alternate title where this movie is called, like, his character's name, where it's just like Nico or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that was the title.
Yeah, that was the original title. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a bunch of, like, region ones, but the one I paid for, that to make sure that it was, like, for American Blu-ray, was fucking $50.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm buying this right now, and when it comes in the mail, if it's not region locked, I'm gonna laugh in your face.
Oh, I'm gonna fucking God! I shouldn't have said that.
Dude, why wouldn't you just buy it digitally, and then if it goes away, oh well. But it was only like $6 or $5.
I mean, honestly, I'm not mad. It's whatever. You know, I've spent $50 on worse shit. So.
Oh, shit. Ugh.
I went through such lengths to save you money a couple weeks ago.
I was going to say, Alex, you're helping me out. Here I am spending fucking $50 on bare bones Blu-rays.
That is fucking dedication right there.
I'm wow. in it.
Even I wouldn't have done that. And I'm actually into him way more than you. Wow, okay.
No, I'm not mad. I'm not mad. At least I'm convincing myself I'm not mad.
Tell yourself that. Just keep repeating it and breathe slowly. So the way the movie starts, it's really weird. Like, we start with childhood pictures of this dude, and like...
Oh my god, it's so weird.
Isn't it funny, though? Because, you know, a lot of times when you see childhood pictures of people, they don't even look like the same person from when they grew up. But you can look at these pictures, and there is no denying who that is. It cannot be anyone else. Even when 100%. He's like 7 years old, his face is basically the same.
Yeah, fucking absolutely. Oh my god.
Right. And you're wondering, is this about him, like, or the story? Like, what are we watching? Very strange. And then you find out that he's in a war at this point, because they said they recruited him at 22. He gets into the situation where these dudes are torturing, like, the prisoners of war. One guy, I guess they just beat him so bad, he's, like, squealing when they first get there. And then he just, like, dies. He's like, get him the fuck out of here. He's dead. Get him the fuck out of here. Like, they could care less. Then the next guy's coming up. And then he says, I'm going to cut your feet off and put them in that basket over there. He's like, wait, that basket? No, that one. Oh, yeah, I guess they'll fit. Yeah. Steven Seagal's totally not into this. He's obviously virtue signaling here. And he's showing us that he's against all this type of stuff. And it's too brutal and blah, blah. He's like, what does this have to do with military intelligence?
I love the villain in this, like the main bad guy. He's kind of like a bit player in a lot of things. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Ghost Dog with, what's his name? Forrest Whitaker. He's like the main mob boss in that. But this guy, like, just his face just screams piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
And like when he's like, who the fuck is this Cherry? when Seagal interrupts, it's just like, this guy, oh my god. It's like, it's just the best point of like pointing out like, yeah, this guy's a fucking piece of shit. So, yep, hate him.
Right. So we have two movies in a row where Van Damme and Steven Seagal were referred to as cherries. Like, now they already have a connection. See that?
It's all got to tie in.
So Steven Seagal just like quits the war? Can you do that?
He just like walks away, and I thought, isn't that considered going AWOL or whatever they call it? You can't just say I quit. I'm fucking out of here.
Well, that's the thing, like, Alex, like, they recruit him into the CIA. I was like, don't you have to, like, apply and go through all sorts of tests, stuff like that? They don't just, like, look for people. They're like, oh, yeah, this guy's good. Let's get him in here. Like, he's just got, like, a fucking free issue into the fucking government. Like, what the hell's going on?
They always like karate teachers into the CIA once they show that they flip their students around in a totally choreographed situation.
In slow motion, too.
Now, was that opening scene, the karate, was that in his real dojo? Because when I was looking up trivia for this movie, it said he actually owned a dojo back then, and it was struggling. And then after this movie came out, all of his classes, like, sold out. So I didn't know if they actually filmed that in his place or not.
It had to have been. That makes the most
sense. I would assume.
I would have went to that class.
Knowing him, that makes the most sense. He's like he's like the real-life version of John Kreese, except he's, like... not as much of a psychopath. He's just like a narcissist.
Oh, he's like Terry Silver from Karate Kid Part 3.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Same hair and everything. Yeah.
Yep. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, he totally buys into his own bullshit, even in 1988. Like, it's fascinating with him. Like, and listen, I'm a Steven Seagal fan. Like, honestly, I mean, like, if you... I don't know how to word that. Like, knowing what I know about him, like, now, I have reservations and I keep him at arm's length. But, like, I have to say, I like his first four movies and stuff.
Yeah,
so
you can separate the art from the artist kind of thing.
I like this really rare movie that no one really knows about called Fire Down Below. I like On Deadly Ground, you know, to some extent. It's a little corny, but I like that, too.
Like, his characters, like, I'll say with these ones we're doing, like, his characters are very likable.
Yeah.
But it's just now, he's just, knowing who he is now, it's like, whatever, you just gotta, like, remove yourself from that.
Yeah, he plays the role good. Like, he's an intimidating-looking guy. Like, he just got that permanent scowl on his face, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, he fits the part, for sure. He looks like a badass. Although, it's kind of alarming seeing him in this movie, because he's so slim compared to the, water buffalo that he would become later in life.
He's almost too slim, though. Like, when he's in those, like, big baggy tank tops, he looks like...
That's what I'm saying. It's, like, startling to see when you go back and watch this one.
Yeah, he looks emaciated.
He's, like, as skinny as me in these movies.
He looks like he has, like, he's dying of, like, AIDS or something. Like, it's really Because you know him now, you look there, you're like, oh, God, is he okay? And I was like, no, that was 40 years ago. Oh, okay.
Dude, he's a whale now.
Yeah. And it's weird that someone like him, who must have such discipline, cannot seem to curb his appetite. Like, it's so strange, right? Like, you think he could do anything in the world. It's like, but he can't stop eating. Like, even just lowering it to, like, 1,800 calories or whatever you have to do. I don't know, but right. He can't stop doing it. It's weird. So, yeah, he's way... So, one of the funniest stories about Steven Seagal, I guess we'll start off our journey with him with this story. So, this is a true story. I forgot who he was talking to, but the guy who he was talking to tells this story on Howard Stern one time. So, Steven Seagal walks up to this guy and he goes, I just read the greatest script I have ever read in my entire life. And the guy goes, wow, really? He's like, that's awesome, dude. Who wrote it? And he goes, I did.
I knew you were going to say that. What a fucking narcissist. Oh my God.
Can you imagine that? He wrote a script and read it back.
So did it turn into a movie? One of his movies?
I don't know. I wish I knew that.
Probably one of his
DMX movie.
Yeah, it's probably one of his straight to DVDs, like The Bank Heist 2 or some shit. Like, just the most generic title. Yeah, like just something fucking stupid.
I'm gonna have to deep dive into some of his later movies, because after On Deadly Ground, which was his sixth movie, I think that came out in 1994. After that one, I never saw another one. And I know they're probably all trash, but I have to watch some of them. If you all have any recommendations from that era, like late 90s onward.
I'll say Into the Sun is one that is kind of decent because there's a lot of production value. The one with DMX is kind of one of the better ones. If you want to,
wait,
you know.
He actually did do one with DMX?
Yes!
Oh my God.
No, I thought you were just kidding. No, dude.
Oh my God. All right, I'm going to have to watch that one.
Yeah. So, like, I could definitely pick a few for you. Now, listen, one time I did go deep diving, like about 8 years ago, and I bought most of his movies just blindly. Not like Pat for $50 each, but I paid about $6. But
yeah, so the DMX movie is called Exit Wounds.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's got to be like a 2000 to 2002 joint, right?
Something like that.
2001.
Of course, yep.
When DMX was at the height of his popularity.
Oh, R.I.P.
So, in this movie, it's the most, how do you word this? It's the most ambitious storyline for an action B movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, at one point, I had no idea what was going on, but then I rewatched it, and it did seem a little easier. But at the time, so this cousin of his, the grandmother's crying. I don't know where the mother is, but the grandmother's crying. She can't even do that convincingly, but she does and says that, you know, this girl's with this like drug guy, and Seagal's like, all right, I'll look for her. So
goes to work on his own kid's baptism. He's there. He's like, oh, I gotta go to work. It's like, you're leaving. I'm pretty sure they'd give you the day off for that kind of thing.
So he goes and he beats this guy up. And so what do you think of the, I know we shouldn't be talking about this because it's not really a great situation, but is that cousin of his hot or what?
Yeah.
The one who was all strung out, you know?
She wants to do drugs. Like, she's begging him to, like, go away because she wants to keep getting...
Hey, go away!
I got my math homework and my history all right here.
You're going to write me a note, Nico?
It's like, oh, yeah, she wants to do drugs. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah, no, she's not like, oh, gee, please save me. He's forcing me down and shooting me full of heroin. No, no, no. There's tables of coke and needles and cigarettes and everything else.
That whole fucking kit is just...
The spoon.
So before he goes upstairs, he's downstairs in the little bar area talking to all those guys, questioning them. And it's almost like that's the precursor or the genesis to the bar scene in Out for Justice.
It's like
they took that scene and looked at it and thought, that was pretty good, but we can amp this up by a million and make it 1,000 times better. He walks around the bar. He's like, have you seen this girl? They're like, I ain't seen shit. Why don't you fucking assholes leave me alone? I seen the top of her head. Then he starts kicking their ass one by one, just like in Out for Justice. Bartender says, stop this motherfucker. He's crazy. Fucking Italian puke.
Yeah, he is not Italian, by the way.
It's hilarious, too, because like in this movie, hardcore, and in the next one, is like the ADR of people just in the, like, you're hearing things that the side characters are saying, but you're not seeing them. And it's like the most, like, obvious shit. They're like, oh man, he's a crazy cop. Like,
it's so bad.
Yeah, but also that fucking bartender, why does he come back as like a main henchman in there? What is the fucking deal with this guy? I know we can get into that later on, but that's one of the things. I was like, he's a bartender in the beginning, and then all of a sudden he's like one of the, like, he's in the top, like, final, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
You'll never be the man, Nico. You'll never be the man.
Can we get this over with? I gotta eat.
And then he's like, okay, fine. She's upstairs in C2.
Yeah. He's also like a discount, like, version of, what's his name? The dude from the last one, Tango and Cash, Maniac Cop. He's like a discount version of that guy. You got a hell of a face on that guy.
But yeah, not enough of a pronounced jaw, though, for sure. But yeah, that I loved this bar scene. I always love scenes like this. Like, I'm one of those losers who, like, live through these characters. Like, you finally get to do stuff in your own mind that you always wanted to do. There's certain types of people, and this scene is one of them. That other bar scene and Out for Justice is one of them. And again, let's note that this is one of the first of many movies where they give Steven Seagal three word titles in his movies. Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, Out for Justice, On Deadly Ground. Like, that became a thing, and they actually would, by the time Above the Law happened, they wanted to name it something else, and somebody goes,
Wait, when Out for Justice came out.
When Out for Justice.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes. You know what I did on the Predator show? I said, in the beginning...
Terminator.
I said, yeah, all the Terminator kills.
I caught it.
I was like, oh my god.
But yeah, Out for Justice was supposed to be called something with something about blood.
Right.
I mean, we'll get to that when we do that movie. I have it written down, but yeah, I didn't know that. And I like Seagal's names in all these movies. You know, he's Nico in this. The next one, he's Mason Storm.
Yeah.
Mark Forget, he's Hatcher. Then he's Gino. But Under Siege comes out, he thought it would be a good idea to call himself Casey.
His character names are out of this world. I love it. Also, just like the hardcore, like, what's his last name in this one? I forget. It's like Nico.
I can't remember.
Some fucking asshole reason I want to call him like Nico fucking Tortellini or some shit. Just like some fucking generic ass like thing.
It's something uber Italian.
It's like the most obvious. But yeah. And then like Alex said, like, he's not Italian.
No, he's like Jewish and like Russian or something weird. Like,
yeah, I saw his whole genetic breakdown on the trivia section.
He did?
Yeah, they had like 5 different ethnicities listed.
Well, him being Jewish totally explains why he did the sign of the cross completely wrong on his kid's head. Like, I don't know what he was doing there, but that was not the cross. That was weird. So, anyway, he goes and he gets rescues this girl, and this guy tells him that there's going to be a drop off of this big shipment at, you know, whatever the packing
meat packing plant. Another one we've run into.
Yeah, Paulie must have been off that day.
Yeah, yeah. We keep going to meat packing plants and foundries. What is going? And now bars. We're gonna keep going to bars.
Hilarious part about that meat packing thing too is just something I took away from this is they're all dressed undercover, so they have like all like the butcher like coats on, but they all have the blatant fucking earpieces in.
That's what I said. I was like,
that's what I was thinking. He's got the white coat on, but that's it. You think those people are going to look at him and not know who the fuck it is because he's got a white coat on? And
exactly.
I mean, he's not covering his face or anything.
Well, before we get into this whole thing, let's jump back a bit. When all those weird dudes were like getting boners over his partner, Jax, do you guys feel she's as hot as they think she is?
You talking about Pam Grier?
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked this because I happen to think she's very attractive. Now, I'm not wild about some of her hairdos in this movie, but she was a big star in the 70s in a lot of those blaxploitation movies that would come out. Like, there was one called Foxy Brown or something like that.
Yeah.
If you've there's some clips you can look up online from some of her movies that, that's all I'll say. Yeah.
Yeah, no, oh, no, she's definitely, like, attractive. Like, she was actually, again, I'm going to reference fucking third podcast in a row, going to reference that movie Class of 1999. She's also one of the robot killer teachers in that one.
Oh,
and
okay.
You see some stuff in that that's pretty good, and that's only like 2 years removed from this. No, she's, yeah.
Wow.
She's pretty good, yeah.
So, yeah, they do this bust, and so we have these blowhard scenes with this guy. So he shoots at the car when it's getting away and it hits him and I'm like, oh damn. Like, cause I didn't memorize this. I saw this years ago.
It hits him hard.
Yeah. I'm like, wow. He let himself get hit by a car. Then all of a sudden, a second later, he's still on the fucking hook.
He's on top of the car after he got hit by the car, smashed against the windshield, and he still had the wherewithal to hold on to the fucking car. And just as they're flying down the road, I expected to hear Surf and Safari, and he gets up and starts doing handsprings on top of the car like Teen Wolf.
Yeah, this is very reminiscent of Teen Wolf or Toxic Avenger.
Well, he's choking the fucking guy, and that scene just goes on too long.
Yeah, he's fucking like, strangling the guy.
Stop the fucking car! It was, oh my god.
That was hilarious.
It's amazing, but I'm like,
funny in the best of ways. I'll not even make fun of funny. That was just funny.
Yeah. Stop the fucking car.
Oh, that guy is hamming it up big time, man.
That's, oh, yeah.
A thing I had about this and for the next movie is that all the bit players in this movie are fucking eating up their roles.
They're going for it, dude.
Yeah, and it kind of works. That's the funny part.
It does. It does work.
Oh, absolutely. For sure, man.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing here. So they're all free to go. Because the feds have some kind of deal with these guys. That I didn't exactly get clear either time I watched this. Do you guys, why are they let go?
Yeah, I don't think they explained that. Like, if they had something on, like, if those guys had something on the feds that they were, you know, could blow them the fuck up for?
Yeah, I think it's like they're supposed to be keyed into, like, they're kind of in on the whole deal too. It's like they kind of, the way I saw it, this is probably looking way too fucking far into this movie, was...
Somebody has to. Because we don't know what's happening.
It's like you have to, like, be thinking way too much about this movie to, like, mental gymnastics.
Yeah, it's mental gymnastics for sure. It's like, dude, just have someone kidnap your daughter and go get him. Like, that's what Commando did. It's very simple. And then he has to kill the president of Valverde and then whatever. Okay, that's easy.
Exactly.
This is like, what?
It's very deep.
And then Jax, it's all this whole thing that she's retiring in 8 days, so you know something's going to happen to her.
Of course.
So him and Jax go tailing these mob guys. They go to that church. So the mob guys go into church, and Seagal, or Nico and Jax, go in the church behind them and just kind of stand off to the side. They're not even really hiding from them.
It's an empty church.
Kind of standing behind a pillar, but they're looking around the corner. I was like, are they using, like, the cloaking technology from Predator or something that they can't be seen? I mean, I expected Seagal to, like, start doing that fucking clicking noise with his mouth like the Predator does.
Yeah.
Above the law, : Predator 3.
The priest in this movie, too, is he not a dead ringer for Pacino?
Right.
He's, like... cruising era Pacino. Like,
you know what, dude? I have never seen that, and that's criminal. I've heard that's a really good movie, and I've never watched it. I've got to watch that.
Good day. Cruising is like you're gonna want to take a shower after that. It's a really fucking good movie. It's just, yeah, it's a tough watch.
Yeah, and then we get to these illegal immigrants for some reason in a church, and they're all living in one room with no beds, no ovens, no...
Where does that fit into the story, unless I missed something? I mean, how is that pertinent?
You didn't miss anything. It's just a
miss. It's so bizarre.
Right. And how come every movie we watch somehow is so poignant to today? Like, what is... Between that jail area in Death Warrant and this movie, like, what is this? Like, are we this new political agenda on the show? Like, why is everything coming back? And it was all...
Been there the whole time, apparently.
I guess, but it was always, like, some weird novelty, bizarre, what-the-fuck moment, and now it's our life. It's, like, the weirdest thing. Like, I don't even know what's happening here.
Well, there was just no social media back then to point all that shit out.
Yeah, that's true.
But even the last 15 years, is like... I've been on MySpace since, 2004, and then we moved to Facebook, and I never heard of all this stuff, and suddenly this is all you hear about. It's the weirdest thing.
What's Facebook? I'm still on MySpace. What do you mean?
He's still looking at Tom's profile picture. Trying to figure out the formula on that.
He's my only friend.
What should my profile song be?
Yeah, remember that? Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, dude, that was awesome. To, like, curate your little songs on there, yeah.
I would update my song as if people were looking on my page every week.
You definitely had Angelus theme from Sleepaway Camp as your...
Oh, I'm sure. So, then we get to this amazing scene at where he beats up these guys in a convertible that pull up in an alley, and they're like, hey, you're looking for, whatever his name is? And he's like,
God.
And he goes, yeah? And he points the gun, he goes, don't worry, we're not... I'm not gonna shoot you. These guys are gonna beat you to death.
And then they all have machetes.
Machetes, pipes, bats, yeah. And he goes right to the guy with the machete, somehow takes control of it, and chops the guy holding the gun's hand off.
But then the guy, does the gun goes off, does that guy, like, shoot himself in the head when his hand comes off? Is that what that, because the cut is too quick?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
I'm like, I was surprised at, like, the brutality and gore of this one. Even for 88, like, for an action movie, I was like, holy shit, because, like, even when they show, like, the far out shot, that guy's dismembered hand and a puddle of blood is still on the ground in the background. Like, they, like, show all that, which I was really surprised about. I was like, wow.
That was sick, dude. That was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, either he shot himself or he instantly fainted after his hand was cut off.
I think it's the same, yeah. It's pretty shocking.
Pussy. Then he goes and beats up the other guys. I'll tell you, I loved most all of his fighting in this movie. And let's talk about this. This style of fighting was never seen before, ever. this Aikido or whatever it's called.
Right.
Like, yeah. No one ever did stuff like this, and it really related to a lot of people because no one's jumping up and doing spin roundhouse kicks. No one's doing things that Bruce Lee did or Chuck Norris, like things that you know you can't do. It almost seems like you can have a guy come at you and you could just move your arms around and then just manipulate his weight.
It's just like he only ever does like two movements max on one person and they're incapacitated.
It's always like he does this and I know we're jumping ahead, but for Out for Justice, he is a hardcore fan of, like, the fucking swift elbow, and then using your hand, like, I mean, obviously we're on audio here, but, like, you guys can see me, like, this, like, the boom, like, the bottom.
That bottom. And he likes to grab their arm, fucking twist it over.
Yes, yes, yep, yeah.
Snap the arm over his shoulder.
Yeah,
oh, yep. That's amazing. He cannot go in one movie without bending your, hyperextending an arm. Nope. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, so it was great to see this. It's very refreshing. Very early on, 1988. He was a breath of fresh air. He had a great presence. His hair eventually becomes better with the ponytail, not so much now, where it's flailing around in the back and looking all weird and boxy.
It kind of works for me, though. It's almost like it just makes him more unhinged looking in some of those scenes in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like fucking... like Bozo the Clown in some of these scenes, dude.
It is. Like, you ever see Hulk Hogan fight in a match, and since he has just the horseshoe ring around his head, and when it puffs out in, like, the middle of a match, he looks like a fucking clown.
Yeah, and that's once he gets all sweaty and shit, it just starts sticking out.
That's what a Seagull looks like. And he would have been like Hulk Hogan's hairline, let's be honest. He stopped that right away.
Oh, yeah.
Hogan didn't have the presence of mind to stop it. But, so yeah, he... Then he has to chase this one guy down. The guy gives him some, like, weird half-assed answers, then eventually gives him the real answer, then he knocks him out for doing it. And then this weird construction guy, who's, like, way too tall, way too fat, walks over to him, and he goes, "Hey, why are you fucking with my friend?" Like, that guy's your friend? The two of you look like you would never talk to each other, but okay. That guy is your friend.
It's so fucking weird.
Seagal goes, "Hey, man, I'm not in the mood." And he goes, "Hey, fuck your mood, man." And Seagal smokes him in the stomach with the hardest body blow you've ever seen in your life.
That's amazing. And then the other guy's, "Yeah, man, what's up? Yeah, peace, brother."
Yeah, we're cool. We're cool.
Yeah, that's like, fuck this.
Just like so, yeah, you're right, though. Like, it's just this chase scene that's like a poignant plot in the movie. And then these guys are just, it's just this random fucking scene.
Yes.
So bizarre. It's like, he just needed to showcase, because it's his first movie, he just needed to show that he could beat the shit out of literally anyone.
And no matter how small or tall or big or whatever you are, I will knock you out with one punch. Yeah. So Nico gets suspended from the police force. They go ahead and blow up the church, and they kill the wrong priest.
Oof, that church, that was surprising to me, like, how brutal, like, some of the shit was. Like, they kill a little kid. Like, yeah. The gore that they show on some of that stuff, too, like, the burns and stuff, is actually, like, really, I was like, for, like, an action movie of, like, this kind of capacity, I was really impressed by, like, kind of the detail they did to, like, the brutality there, like, showing you, like, these people are fucking assholes, so.
Yeah. And us being horror fans, we all know that they were really destroying horror movies by this time in 87, 88.
We're lucky, I guess, to be interested in these like action movies where they got away with all this stuff. And it adds to the story, in a sense, really.
And it feeds our horror, the slasher needs and wants and gore. Yeah, it's great.
So I have a question. When the cops show up at Nico's house with the search warrant, and they're like in their bedroom. They're going through his wife's like underwear drawer and shit. Some old woman with an eye patch on that looks like fucking One-Eyed Willie shows up. Did I miss her before? Like,
yeah.
Is that his mom or her mom?
That's his mom. Yeah.
Okay.
She's in the church with him. It's very weird because
have an eye patch earlier?
No, it was from the explosion.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, but the thing is weird is that I thought she was like his wife, Sharon Stone's mother. I didn't realize until Alex said it earlier that the woman in the beginning, the Italian woman, was his grandmother. I thought that was his mother.
Okay.
And that Sharon Stone being like the American person, I thought that was just like a whole thing. But yeah, no, that's supposed to be his mom. Yeah.
All right. So then we get to this wild scene where these kids are crossing the street and they're like, "Wow, hey, Nico, hey." Like, of course, all the kids love him for what?
Tango and Cash moment.
Yeah, right. When he's closing the garage door. Yeah, same thing. So, like, all the kids love him. These guys, these four guys in suits, come out so quickly while the kid, they actually have to push kids out of the way.
Dude, they come out from that bread truck and from behind the truck like the fucking firing squad did.
They are ready to go.
They just probably unload 500 rounds of ammo on his fucking car.
Any half-competent gangster would wait till these kids all walk down the street.
Yeah, the broad daylight nonsense. It's like... Like, you guys, like, we know the other things have established, like, these guys have an honor code. They're not killing kids. These motherfuckers are just like, fuck it. They just go, like, they do them like they did fucking Denzel Washington at the end of Training Day. It's insane.
Yeah, it is wild. So, somehow, among the 500 rounds, not a single one. Are they stormtroopers, these guys? Because not a single one hits Nico. He crawls out the passenger door and crawls behind a different car, waits till one guy out of the four, five, whatever it was, has to reload, and he takes that opportunity to pop up from behind the car and go, "Freeze, motherfucker!"
Oh, yeah.
When there's four other guys with machine guns pointed at him.
If you move, I'll kill this guy. He's saying that. He's like, if he's pointing his gun at one guy, if you move, I'll kill that guy. Another guy that's could easily get the jump on him. It's amazing.
And the guy goes... Well,
another guy? Four guys could have got
they
it.
They all, yeah.
The guy goes, "I don't think you can drop us all, badass." And then Nico fires a bullet right in his heart and he goes, "You're right. I get an A for effort."
I love that shit. Oh my God, that was so awesome.
Baller.
Which, by the way, yeah, we love it, but it's against everything he's trying to portray in this
movie.
True. Yeah, like what he did and his whole, like, you know, holier than now, like, "Why are you torturing this guy, this prisoner of war, and threatening to cut his feet off?" Like,
you're not soldiers, you're barbarians.
Yeah, you're barbarians. But a guy just says some witty remark and you fucking kill him? That's not police procedure, bro. Like, you're either on this side or that side. You can't just do whatever you want.
I guess you could say that he's above the law.
Above the law.
Not mine. Yeah. So, for whatever reason, the other four guys do not just say, look at each other, and then point their guns at him and just unload on him. I don't know why.
Dude, they could have turned him into confetti if they wanted to.
Well, absolutely.
Right. They just listen to him.
He's basically got a fucking squirt gun pointed at him, and they got machine guns.
Yeah, he's got a 1911. I think only holds seven rounds. He wasted one on the guy to make an example of. He's only got six other shots to rely on. Those guys have, like, at least 100 rounds between them all. Like,
Right. So they all drop their guns, and they follow they go in single file, whatever he tells them to do. They go into the bodega for whatever reason. I guess he wanted to grab a snack.
Here we go.
Like, is this where Seagal started his snacking? He's like, hold on, guys. I want to grab a Twix and some Funyuns before we bring it down to the station. So he goes into this place, and one of them just decide to, like, turn on him. And he, like, kicks him, and Seagal uses his momentum to send him into the wall.
That's
or something.
Something else he does. Someone will be running at him, and he'll just kind of step to the side, grab him, and just use their momentum to just throw.
It's like a wrestling move.
Which, I mean, makes sense if someone's running full speed at you.
Yeah, use it. Yeah, if I ever get in a fight, I'm using all this stuff.
The highlight of this scene for me was the fucking store clerk. Like, the ADR and extra shit they do for this guy, they make it a point to cut to him multiple times, being like, "Hey, stop ruining my store! Oh my God!" It's so fucking ridiculous. Like, it's like, this guy might as well be third build on this cast. Jesus Christ.
Right. But when they keep cutting to him, he seems to have different emotions every time.
Smash the ADR they gave him.
No. He seemingly doesn't care at one point. Then he's real, no, stop. Then it's, well, okay.
You're ruining my store!
And then he's excited. Yeah. Then all of a sudden it looks like he's admiring, like, wow, this is great. Or, yeah, it's all over the place.
But this scene, this is what I'm here for when I watch a Steven Seagal movie. Fucking hand-to-hand combat, grab, you know, just busting heads, throwing guys over the produce stand. What is it with produce in these movies? In Cobra, that guy blows up the produce stand in the grocery store. Beating these guys' ass. He throws the one dude through the refrigerator glass. And then there's one guy left. Nico looks around. The guy charges him. He fucking gives a forearm shiver to this guy like you would not fucking believe. If you are listening to this and you have never seen this movie, it is worth watching for this alone. That guy drops to the ground at the speed of light like he got hit by a fucking Mack truck that was going 100 miles an hour. I would love to do that to somebody. And then Seagal...
he decides the rest of the store is already trashed, but you know what's still good?
The window. Well, so he puts his head down and just fucking bull rushes that guy like a fucking bulldozer through the window and then lands on his feet and takes off running like he's Usain Bolt just down the sidewalk.
No,
when he landed on his feet, that was just incredible.
Right.
And he's not even cut. If you go through a window like that, you're going to be fucking cut to ribbons.
I was going to say, you're going to be lacerated to shit.
Yeah.
Right. That's fine. So then we get to this woman in the window. They're panning across like this neighborhood in Chicago. This woman has this ganglion, purple, pus-filled eye.
I don't know how, like, when you sent that on the text thread this morning, I don't know how you caught that, because that's, like, such a quick fucking shot.
Thank you. I didn't see it either when I was watching the movie.
I don't know how you caught that, Alex. That's amazing.
And I think King Kong Bundy is standing next to her in a dress, right? Is that who that is? Is it King Kong Bundy? Yes.
And then we got our guy Mark Boone Jr. from Sons of Anarchy standing out there, too.
Yeah, we saw Bobby Munson in the other window. That was funny. So he makes, I wrote Nelly, I guess that's the guys, that's that one of those the Fed guys. No, find out that Fox, the guy in the beginning who like helped him run away from the prisoner of war little shack there.
Harris from Major League.
Yeah, the guy who uses Vaseline and snot to throw pitches.
Dude, he's got the biggest mouth I've ever seen. When he opens his mouth wide, it takes up like 80% of his face.
It's awesome because it also helps, like, some of the shit he says in this movie, like, even just, like he's just going for it. Like, his, like, line, the way he accentuates some of the things he says, it's just, like, even the most simplest line, but it just sounds like it has, just, like, such, like, vitriol to it. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. He's making the most of his time in Hollywood.
That's basically it.
So they find out that he is the guy who signed for the C4 explosives from the beginning. Then he makes this guy undress and jump in the lake, which he does not jump in any body of water. When he jumps off that thing, there is no water underneath
him. There's water, but it looks more like an ocean than it does a lake.
In the distance, yeah, that too.
Also, how is that your only revenge? Like, these FBI or CIA guys are the scummiest motherfuckers. How is that your only revenge? Like, you're going to make him get half naked and then jump into a fucking... Like, how is that revenge?
That's what I was thinking. How is that... Like, what was he trying to accomplish by having that guy do that?
Yeah, should have kneecapped him at the best.
Get in the water.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
He should have shot him in the fucking kneecaps and then, like, crawl home or some shit. Like, yeah, it is, like, especially that guy, Agent Neely, I think his character's name, that guy was just, like, the guy's face, unfortunately, doesn't do him a favor, because he just looks like a piece of shit, so you just want the worst shit to happen to these guys. I think I have it on my notes, like, I can't wait till all the bad guys in this movie get what's coming to them, and he's one of the ones that's just, like, that's it, because then he comes back, and he's, like, kind of a good guy later on, like, because he has the drop on him kind of thing, so it's just, like... Yeah, all you do is make him just strip half naked and jump in the water.
Yeah, but for some reason, his pants are off, but his shoes were still on. I don't know how he did that. But the other guy, the other agent, he just kicks a chair at him in the beginning of the movie.
They telegraph that rivalry so well, where you think that's going to turn into like a huge beef, and it goes nowhere.
Nowhere, right. I can tell you, it's a very ambitious movie.
I like when Nico, before he makes that guy get in the water, when he first confronts him in that parking garage, he goes, "What were you doing with that woman up there? Were you engaging in some kind of unnatural sex acts?"
What was that? She was 15 years old?
What is an unnatural sex act? Was he just implying that she was underage?
I think that, and the fact that he's like a CIA guy, like he's like a person of like high power. It's like not to undo there.
To me, an unnatural sex act would be like if you bought a ham and cut a slit into it and started fucking it. That's an unnatural sex act.
Okay, guys, I gotta go.
He's like, damn, I haven't done that in like 6 hours. Oh, God. All right, so he's pumping the priest for info, and it leads to that shootout where Jax gets, like, blown away. And it's so obvious that they only shot, like, her right arm, basically. Yeah. And Seagal, for some whatever weird reason, spends, like, the next, like, couple hours assuming she's dead. He doesn't call anybody. He doesn't go to the fucking hospital that took her, like, see what doctor's in charge of the patient, like, nothing.
I'll give the credit for this. At this point, he's suspended already, so he's not allowed to be, like, a, quote, cop at this point. So I'm justifying that.
Yo, that's why he's looking at her baby pictures. What is, like, is there anybody in this movie that we don't see their baby pictures is what I'm trying to figure out.
He just sits there and starts crying.
Yeah, he starts crying.
There was a scene before that, though, where it shows Nico walking through the airport. And remember, they're in Chicago, right? Did you notice Del Griffith in the background dragging his trunk through the airport? I swear I saw him, dude.
Same year, right?
Chicago, 1 year later. That was 87, yeah.
Shit.
So he was still traveling, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think Neil threw him out of his house by then. He was traveling already. He's like, okay, it's Thanksgiving again. Goodbye. There's a one part where Nico gets on the phone with that dude from Major League, and he goes, he calls him Fox or something, and he goes, yeah, thanks a lot, Nico. Why are you using my name, Nico? Don't use my name.
He keeps calling him Nico.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, well, you said Nico 3 times. I mean, why can't I call you Fox? I didn't know.
Did you know when they had that shootout in the apartment building? When Nico was walking down the hallway of that apartment, did you notice how narrow that hallway was in that apartment building?
Mm-mm.
Dude, a 5-year-old couldn't stand there and extend their arms completely. It was like 2 feet wide, the hallway. Like, if you were leaving one apartment, took one step out in the hall, your second step would be in someone else's apartment, dude. It was ridiculous.
How do they move, like, couches and beds
exactly
in there?
Exactly. Then there was that scene of Nico on top of the train, and then they go down into it, and I was waiting for the Predator to show up in that.
And that went nowhere, too, right? That train, like, that went on 5 minutes longer than it had.
I thought that was going to be, like, some big badass scene, and nothing really happened.
I thought that was going to be, like, the finale.
Yeah.
And then, like, I when I looked up this movie, I was like, it says it's, like, it's an hour and 40 minutes or some shit. I thought that was it. And then when I paused my movie to go to the bathroom and I saw that I still had like a half hour left.
I was going to say like 30 minutes left.
I was like, holy shit, where is this going?
Yeah.
Like,
we do run into a lot of these action movies that go on like 15 minutes too long, right?
It's fun. It's like they go on too long, but at the same time, like it works. But you still have those points where you're just like, where, like, okay, it should be over by now, but there's still this chunk of time left. Where the fuck is this going? And then it goes to insanity, basically.
Right.
Tango.
Yeah, Tango and Cash. Seagal's strapped down to a chair. He has two zip ties around him, and one guy has this band around his neck. And there's a moment that you could look to the right, let's see, his left of his neck. And that band is like an inch away from making contact with his neck. It's not even near him. That guy is not anywhere near putting any tension on that thing.
Also, that shootout, I have a question. I don't know if it is something maybe I missed, but that shootout in the parking garage, Fox gets shot in the leg, and then he slides his gun to the Seagal. He doesn't explicitly die, but we never see him again in the movie, like the rest of the movie. Was it supposed to be implicated that he died? Because I was expecting him to, like, because like they're supposed to be like friends. I expected some sort of like reunion at the end or something, or him to come out the cut in the final act and like save him. But they don't, like, he just gets shot in the kneecap and there's nothing, like, that's it for him. He's just gone.
Yeah, I'm not, well, There's that scene where, is that before or after when Fox has Nico up on the roof of that building at gunpoint?
It's after that, yeah.
I like that scene because Fox has that gun on him, on Nico, and he's like, move real slow. I want to help you, you dumb guinea.
Dude,
he's supposed to be his friend, and he's calling him a dumb guinea.
That's the thing. It's like he's on the phone. He's like, yeah, okay, take it easy, Paizan. I'm like this. And again, the next one, I love being half Italian. The fucking Italian tropes are amazing.
Oh, the fake.
Oh my God, I love it. It's so good.
Not that this matters big, so we don't have to get into it, but was Fox on the bad guy's side or no?
It blurs the lines. I'm not even sure, to be honest.
It's like he is.
It's like he was, but he still wanted to keep Nico like in the loop to try to kind of protect him, I guess.
Yeah, he still cares about Nico as they're like war buddies, so he like sees him as like that. And then when he sees like Nico doesn't have the heart for like the shit that he's into, really, is, but he doesn't want him to like get, you know, iced or anything like that. So
I like when Nico thinks, so he thinks Jax is dead, and he shows up to that house, and he's like, motherfucker's got Jax. And the guy goes, she's gonna make it. She was wearing a vest. And then Nico starts laughing. Like someone just told him a fucking knock knock joke.
Yeah, he's
like,
oh. Uncle Brocka or whatever his name is, this guy who they like highlight, and then he's only got like two scenes. Yeah. He's supposed to be like this badass, and he's just there, he's a guy.
And Sharon Stone, let's get to her real quick. There's a scene where they're laying in bed and she's like, come on, Nico. Swallow your pride. Choke on it if you have to. And I was just like,
why is the CIA calling you at 2 in the morning?
I've seen better acting in fucking 70s pornos, dude. or in Camp Out Nightmare 6. The way she delivers that dialogue was just ridiculous. Choke on it if you have to.
I'm going to kill that son of a bitch.
Can we get the lady from Camp Out Nightmare 6 to do Sharon Stone? I'm like, why don't you choke on your pride, why don't you?
Swallow it if you have to. Yeah.
Sharon Stone should have been walking around the whole time with an ashtray in her hand and a cigarette in her mouth.
If she did, I wouldn't bat an eye. I'd be like, eh.
That's such an inside joke. Most people are like, what?
Who tuned in just to hear Above the Law review, they're like, what?
Don't you know Above the Law is over?
Oh my God,
the stupid shit.
How about when, so like the guy who's sort of the main villain, like he backs into him with his car and he floors it in the parking garage to the wall.
The guy takes his shoes off while they're getting, what was that? Was he like trying to throw
he's trying to throw like last ditch
effort. That's all he could do. And they go through that motherfucking wall. And for that one quick scene, it's like the most plastic dummy you've ever seen in your life. Goes flying off, tumbling off the back of that car. It's like a fucking mannequin, bro.
It's amazing. I love the fact to like add to this a kill is that it's not like, oh, you back through the wall and then he's gonna fall. He falls onto like the third electrifying track of a train track.
The L train. Yeah.
And they make it a point to like show sparks coming out of the track. He not only fell, but he got electrocuted. It's amazing.
Because that matters.
Oh my God.
Look, guys, a dead guy got electrocuted. Isn't that horrible?
This is the second week in a row, at least, that we've had a scene in a parking garage where they just go full fucking demolition derby, just driving around, literally hitting every car they possibly can. And Nico's driving on fucking rims. He's got two tires that are completely gone. He is flying. Sparks are flying everywhere.
We have to do like a trope count in this show. Like,
in my notes, I have like trope listed.
Yeah. Like, we should have, like, Terminator parking garage, Foundry, Terminator 2, Cobra, you know.
It's amazing how similar these movies are in some aspects.
Oh, yeah. We should do the trope when, like, this feds want to take over a case and the cops are pissed. Yeah,
shady government interaction. Well, the best part is about, too, is, like, so he drives away and these guys chase him on foot. Like, He's in a fucking car. Even if he wasn't in a parking garage, were you going to chase this motherfucker?
Yeah, like T2, T1000.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that dummy that fell off the back right away.
So funny.
So funny. And then you could tell they had a real guy finally do it to land in one of those big air mattress things, whatever they do.
The stunt for him landing on the train rail was pretty good, though. Like, it was convincing enough for 1988. I wasn't there, but...
So Seagal gets drugged up. He has his eyes roll in the back of his head. The guy puts this weird black rubber glove on to punch him in his face a couple times. Like, I don't know what that changed about anything, but okay. And supposedly, in real life, when that guy did that, he accidentally broke Seagal's nose.
Yep.
And Seagal had to spend like 24 hours with ice on his face so it didn't make that big black...
Oh, no shit.
Yep, I just read that last night, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
No shit.
Well, that's kind of karma, because didn't he break, like, some guy's wrist? Oh, like Sean Connery's wrist or something, when Seagal was training Sean Connery for one of his, like, what were those movies he did? Was he, like, in Bond movies or something?
I don't know. I mean, was it for the third Indiana Jones movie? Sean Connery was
in that? Yeah, when he had to throw the guy out of the Zeppelin.
Either that or, like, the closest thing I can think to Connery doing anything action-related in the 90s is, like, The Rock, maybe? But I don't see Steven Seagal being on that. I don't know.
No.
So after Nico's tied to that chair and then he, you know, breaks free and beats the shit out of everyone.
Oh, my God.
He does the arm break for the main guy.
Let's talk about that, though.
He fucks that guy up.
But that is a puppet's hand. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't pick up on
that. Oh, yeah.
I'll go back and look. No, I didn't notice.
Dude, it's a plastic hand like this. It does not move. It is fucking plastic.
So I was watching this. The Blu-ray is only 480p quality, and watching it on a 4K TV did not do it any favors.
480?
What do you
Blu-ray?
Mean 480?
Dude,
you got totally ripped.
Blu-rays are 1080. What are you talking about?
I don't know. The specs on this say it was 480.
Where did you buy this from?
I got it on fucking Amazon. I got fleeced. All right, whatever.
You went to a private seller on Amazon.
I don't know. Either way, I still watched the fucking movie. I had a good time. All right. But
listen, doesn't Amazon have 30-day returns?
They do, but I'm not returning this fucking movie.
Please return that.
I'm not returning this.
I will get you a Blu-ray. I will copy my Blu-ray. I'll do whatever I have to do to give you to get.
I'll mail you my $8.59 Blu-ray that I get in the mail.
Until Shout Factory does a special edition with a commentary, I'm not fucking buying another one of these things.
$4.80. You got a DVD, bro. That's not a Blu-ray.
Maybe I read the thing wrong. When we're off air, we'll talk about it. I don't want to be shamed any more than I'm already am.
For now on, none of us make big decisions without asking the other one.
Before you buy any movie, you have to run it by me or Alex first.
Yeah, don't do anything else as far as this podcast goes.
Text you guys after I bought it. I didn't text you guys when I was buying it.
Yeah, he shows us the picture of it in his hand. No, for now on, show us a screenshot of where you want to buy this from.
Yeah. Either way, regardless, still had a decent time with this. But, yeah, no, the quality of the movie, even if it wasn't 1080 on a 4K TV, still wouldn't have done it any favors. But, yeah, no, that, see, like, the, like, dummies are just, like, so blatant. It adds the charm to it. It's funny.
Oh, yeah.
So Nico smashes that guy's nose, and it just, his nose looks like fucking ground beef.
Oh, my God. That's, again, with the brutality. Yeah, the
gore. And then Seagal stands up, and there's this great close-up of him just kind of looking around, and he's got blood all over his face and shit. And it immediately made me think of the fucking black guy from Rocky V who played Don King, who took a bite out of Jason's heart, and Jason goes to hell. Fucking, I just imagine Seagal ripping that guy's heart out and just fucking biting into it and looking around. That would have been amazing.
When Seagal is standing there, and then they pan and show all those dead bodies,
yeah,
it's like... they were all alive 30 seconds ago. Like, that was the quickest abrupt ending in movie history. Like, literally, every one of those people were alive and kicking and talking shit, and suddenly they are dead in 30 seconds. Like, everybody's dead in 30 seconds.
Yeah,
I wanted him to have, like, because, like, this movie, I would give it, did a really good job of making me fucking hate the bad guys. Like, I wanted to see all these fucking assholes get the worst shit done to them. Especially that fucking piece of shit bartender. I don't know what it is about that guy. I wanted him to die in the worst fucking way possible, but all he does is get a fucking shotgun blast to the chest. You expect it to be like a big build-up, like he's gonna, like, make that guy pay in like a fantastic kill, and all he does is shoot him.
Right. This guy looks like a homeless version of Paul McCartney in the band Wings. And... And he says the whole time, "You'll never be the man, Nico, never be the man." So, obviously, the man is this other ugly guy, right? So, why wouldn't Nico do this, that, the other thing, break his fucking neck in front of this bartender, and he goes, "I'm the fucking man," and poof, and then exactly. Blow his head off,
yeah,
right?
Pay off, yeah.
Or maybe just pull his tie and choke his neck with it or something. Like,
something.
Something great, right? No, nothing. Like, God, how could you build that up to zero?
Yeah, and even killing the main guy, Zango, was like, I mean, as much as I loved how he fucked that guy up, because, like, the way they do that, that's, like, a brutal way to go. Break his arm, break his fucking, break his neck, and then just fucking throw him like he's a fucking piece of garbage.
Right.
Just, like, that works, but...
That's worked, but it's quick. It's too quick.
Right, yeah, you want to see these guys, like, pay for it.
Where's him putting his face through a couple car windows or something? Or
where's him, like, making that... So is that supposed to be heroin that he's injecting into these guys, this whole movie?
Was that truth serum or heroin?
I thought it was supposed to be, like, quote-unquote truth serum.
Yeah, but it's, like, it's gotta be just heroin.
Because the first guy was, like, spilling his guts, supposedly, but, like, against his will, but I guess he was supposed to be, like, telling secrets or something, I guess.
Yeah. I was like, you would think that Stallone would have done something. Not Stallone, what the fuck am I saying?
the Terminator?
Dude, the fucking, I'm so in that, entrenched in that mindset.
Oh, the version you bought has Stallone in it?
Imagine.
Wow, that wouldn't surprise me.
Man, that one's worth $50.
The last action hero version of it, where everything is replaced by Stallone.
Stallone, yeah.
No, I was just like, you would think that Seagal would use that on a villain as like a, like, because like make the main villain's weapon work against them kind of thing, like how that kind of trope. But yeah, he doesn't do any of that.
Nothing.
Still satisfying to see him get fucked up so quick, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then we get to this lame ass ending where he collapses in like some big thing where they're doing a presentation. Then it looks like some Make a Wish Foundation. The guy comes and visits Stallone at his house later. And says, hey!
Stallone.
Like, oh my God, why do we keep doing that? That's your fault. Oh my God.
Yes, let's go.
Stallone. Let's just go back. I want to make this whole podcast about Stallone, Stallone, Stallone.
It's because that fucking reel from Lockup that I sent you guys yesterday. I was rewatching it earlier. It stuck on my mind. No, but this movie, I would say, did a good job of making me, like, plot-wise, not realize who's good and who's bad. Because even in that final scene where they're at his house wanting to interview him, it seemed a little off because maybe this is just me reading way too much into it. The way they talk, like, oh yeah, like, no, all that's taken care of. I thought that the senator's secretary, that lady, I thought there was going to be like some big ending twist where she turns out to be the assassin that's sent for him, and that Seagal was going to have to like do a last minute like heroic stand-in. That's just me reading way too much into it, but like the uneasiness of the plot for this did that for me, so I'll give the movie credit. It made me like aware, like a situational awareness. I'm like, okay, like this could go anywhere at any minute, so
right.
How often are you going, oh actually the one another thing I'll give for this, said the title of the movie in the movie, which is always a fucking plus.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I love it when that happens. But
yeah. He's like, yeah, well, sometimes, yeah, they're not above the law. It's like, yep.
Yeah, you think you're above the law, you're not above mine.
I like when Nico shows up at his house at the end of the movie, and there's, like, paparazzi camped outside. Like, it's fucking Britney Spears' house, dude. Like, would they really care that much back in the 80s about a story like that? Like, they're just like, oh, with their cameras and their microphones and shit. Get out of here.
Well, according to Tango and Cash, they do.
Well, it's also, Chris, to keep the trope going, remember Halloween 2 when there was all that press at the Myers house?
Oh, nice!
Yeah.
Throwing rocks through the window, news fans.
Has to come up on every show. Yes. I'm sorry.
Hey, Halloween 2. Let's just keep talking about Halloween 2. So... How many
rubber hands are we breaking?
Yeah, how many arms with plastic hands at the end of it are we breaking, hyperextending, for this movie out of 5, Ghoul?
This was spotty for me. I'm not a huge Seagal guy, but I'm definitely getting into it now. So getting into this was actually a real treat. It was fun. The story actually kept me really engaged, and this is a 3.5 out of 5 for me. Yeah, this is really good. I like this a lot. Worth the fucking $50.
Yeah, that's why I let you go first, because you paid so much for this.
Worth the fucking $50 rip-off Blu-ray.
Wow. Yeah, DVD.
I'll watch it 50 times to get my money's worth, so.
It's probably a burned DVD. It's a burned DVD, and it just says Above the Law written in Sharpie on it.
Chris, how many arms are you hyperextending with a plastic hand at the end of it? Out of 5 for Above the Law.
So, like I said, I only saw this one time back in the day when it came out because this was his first movie, and I didn't see any of his films until Out for Justice came out, which was his fourth one. So then I went back and watched the first three, but then I didn't watch this again until probably a year ago, and I liked it. And then this time when I watched it, I liked it even more. Considering it's his first movie and he like came out of nowhere, like nobody knew who the fuck he was. Now, I don't know if this was a box office success. I didn't dig that deep into it. But looking back, considering this was his first film, it's pretty impressive. Like Ghoul, I'll give it 3.5 out of 5. It's a very, very solid start to his career.
Yeah, and I kind of misspoke earlier when I was saying about how he's the only one that came out with a full feature-length movie to start off his action career. Van Damme, it wasn't just that Predator thing. He was in this other weird movie where he was, like, dancing. You ever see that weird clip of him?
I think I did years ago, but I don't even remember it at this point.
Yeah, it's, like, really corny dancing in a park or breakdancing or some weird shit like that.
You're not talking about the dancing scene from Kickboxer, are you?
No,
I was gonna say, I was like, oh, so that. he's got a dancing, like, got a thing for it, okay. I'll have to look
this up. He might. He might. Very impressive for a first outing. Brought a breath of fresh air to the action scene. My wife made a weird comment. She walked in the room, she watched about 10 minutes, and she said, why is Steven Seagal famous? So, I was like, what do you mean, hon? And she goes, like, I don't get it, though. Like, what about him? I was like, can't you really don't? Like, to me, it's pretty obvious. I think he has tons of charisma, tons of presence.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. He has the look. He has the moves, for sure. And for a guy who, I don't even know what his acting experience was by the time he did this, but he was just as good as an actor as most of these other action guys, like, right away. I thought he should be famous, for sure. It's not a question to me, but yeah, this was solid for sure. Not absolutely amazing, but I will go ahead with, I will break 3.5 arms with a plastic hand at the end of it for this one out of 5.
Cool.
Definitely a strong outing, yeah.
Did you know Chuck Norris was originally supposed to play this role? Or at least that's according to IMDb trivia.
Oh, wow.
Thank Christ they didn't do that.
I was going to say, I'm not a big Chuck Norris guy, but...
Me neither.
I can safely say I'm 48 years old and I have never watched a Chuck Norris movie in my life, except Dodgeball when he's a judge and he goes.
The only one I ever saw was Sidekicks.
Yeah, I never saw anything.
I think the only thing I've really ever watched that he was in was Expendables 2.
Oh, well, I did see that and I don't remember jack shit about it.
Yeah.
Van Damme was the bad guy.
Was.
Stallone actually was in that one, if you didn't know that.
we're not just going to say it accidentally. Yeah, he was in that one. All right, well, there you go. Above the Law, great time going through Seagal's first outing in action movies. We will go through many more for sure in the year to come. So we'll see you guys next week.